Hello, this is Romecast number 7 with Father David Nix at Padre Peregrino. The music you hear right now is what I heard at Marytown, the United States St. Maximilian Kolbe Shrine that I was at today. Normally we won't have bumpers, music bumpers on Romecast, but I thought, well, I heard this today and wanted to share it with y'all, so it's going to be the beginning and end a little bit, and it'll also be the featured image on the blog. Don't forget that if you're on the blog, we're on iTunes Podcast. If you're on iTunes Podcast, you can only see the basics and some of the links we have on PadrePeregrino.org or com. Today I'm with Andromeda, as I am every Tuesday. How's the weather on the West Coast, Andromeda?
Nice gray overcast, as usual, where I am.
Sounds like how it usually is up there. Well, Andromeda's had an interesting few years. I don't exactly know where to start. Describing her crazy jobs and some other milestones. So maybe just tell us about a few.
Well, just recently, most recently anyway, I was discerning with a religious community based in San Francisco Archdiocese for just under a year. That not working out, I left and went back into industry, working in the aerospace defense industry, where we were building high-powered directed energy lasers and power systems for entry and landing systems for the recent Mars InSight lander, actually. I think that was in November it reached Mars. And about 8 months after that, I decided it was time again and entered a discernment with another community for a very short period this time. And since that hasn't worked out, I'm just leaving it the question of religious life in God's hands. So we'll see.
We could like rename this the Misfit Religious Podcast or something between you and me.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm catching up.
Catching up to my numerous assignments.
Yeah. Well, you've had more years over me.
Yeah, right. Well, and I always mention super lasers, but I actually haven't actually asked you very much about them. So I didn't know about the Mars stuff, but what can you tell us about the... Maybe we'll talk Mars next week. What can you tell us about super lasers? Because I honestly didn't know that the United States had weapons like that. Are we allowed to talk about
that? Well, we don't. Yeah, we can talk about it. It's public domain. The company that I worked with is on the definite bleeding edge of this kind of technology. The main problem with the Star Wars kind of equipment, these high-powered laser weapons, is energy storage and dumping and then recharging, those kind of three problems, which are being solved now by the type of battery systems being built by the company I was working for. And this is well past prototype. It's been tested. We'll, you know, probably have them in our arsenal within, I'd say, the next 2 years easily, as something that could go into work. And now, just to be very clear, this is a defense system. It's not meant to be, you know, mounted on an AI army of robots to, you know, scorch the earth. Any technology like this, of course, can... you know, go awry, but the intention of the United States and of the people working on it at the company that I was at really is for defense against small nuclear weapons, for instance. Mm. You know, they'd be able to target on the ground briefcase size weaponry and destroy it, you know, from long distances.
And didn't you tell me, though, that these super lasers have the firepower of nuclear weapons, though?
No, they don't have the firepower of nuclear weapons. It's just a different thing. The thing is, I mean, you could kind of relate it to more like a bomb, right? A cannon mm-hmm. is shot, you know, this ball goes far and hits a target and destroys that target. In that sense, the laser is able to do the same thing with more precision. Now, you could dematerialize something in the same way. You know, I guess when a bomb hits something, you think of more like it hits and shrapnel, you know, everywhere. Right. And then there's the power wave that comes from that, that, you know, creates a lot of kind of ancillary destruction. But the laser is much more focused, and in the sense of maybe in a nuclear weapon, it's more dematerializing. It just destroys matter, you know. Wow. So there's not going to be shrapnel.
Doesn't that go against one of the laws of thermodynamics?
Well, you know, there's...
It more like vaporizes that you meant. I know, yeah, it's vaporizes.
There's ash, you know, just like when you set a fire to a log, you know, the log is no longer there. It's not like shreds of log, you know, little splinters of wood. The material that remains is different, transformed entirely. And so the matter is
cool, though,
gone.
That we could have super lasers to shoot nuclear weapons out of the sky. Because, you know, those ICBMs are extremely fast. Aren't they something like 10,000 miles an hour?
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but
obviously we need something extremely fast to shoot it down.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this, right. We're talking long distances, at, you know, something of the speed of light. So
who do you think, and I didn't, prep Andromeda to answer this question, folks, but who would you be most afraid is going to nuke us, or maybe we start it with them? I mean, maybe I should put it in the more general, what two countries in the entire world do you think are the most, likely to start nuking each other?
Well, I will default to, you know, what military intelligence says is the most dangerous. You know, China, Iran, and North Korea right now are very problematic. China actually being the top of that list, they have, you know, built floating islands, you know, size of, you know, you think of Hawaii, that are totally militarized and ready, you know, for war, floating in international waters, you know, that they could do something with that. They do have nuclear technology. I don't know the state of it. I honestly don't research, you know.
But you think that's a bigger danger than, say, like India versus Pakistan?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we'll hear about Mars maybe next week or something, but I think you have a topic on abortion for us today.
Yeah, there's an interesting story published by ABC News about an upcoming memoir being written by Irene Villar, I think is the pronunciation of her name, titled Impossible Motherhood. It's a confession of sorts about what she's calling, quote, abortion addiction. The release date is planned for this coming October, so it's not out yet. I haven't read the book, but this interview gives some excerpts from the book. So it's not going to be a pro-life book. In fact, one of the author's primary concerns is that her self-described abortion addiction will be misunderstood and twisted by the pro-life movement to deny women the, quote, right to choose. But what I found interesting about the story is the surprisingly honest language used to describe abortion, and especially the ongoing psychological aftermath. The story intends, actually, it seems at least, to blame her repeated abortions, which I think were 15 over 16 years, on what intersectionality parlance typically describes as the system of white male patriarchal oppression, something to that effect. With that, much of what she actually conveys reveals some sentiments that are really a scathing indictment on the culture of abortion. So I wanted to draw those out.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's great. I pulled this up here. I'm going to be looking at it while you describe it, and I'll link that to the podcast I was describing off the air to Andromeda. I'm having some trouble getting the links to the actual text of the iTunes thing. So you just go to the blog and we'll do it. Or you can just Google it. If you just Google on ABC News, abortion addict confesses 15 procedures in 16 years. Actually, it's a lot of people probably who listen saw it on social media. But you pointed out a couple things when we were off the air that I think is extraordinarily important to point out. So I'll hand the mic back to you at this point.
Yeah. So for instance, one of the quotes Vilar gave in the interview with ABC speaks to a cultural attack on motherhood, where she says, quote, everybody is having babies. Hollywood has even developed some sort of motherhood fetish, said Vilar. Yet women are repeatedly told that they must be everything but mothers, everything but someone weighed down by motherhood. The journalist, Susan D. James, I believe, follows that up with a series of statistics that kind of reads like a proof text for Humanae Vitae, but she states about half of all pregnancies in the U.S. are unintended. 40% of those are terminated by abortion, according to a 2002 CDC report. Then an estimated 50% of women who have one abortion will have a second, according to the Guttmacher Institute, whose 2006 report found that the majority of these women were over the age of 30 and using contraception. So again, she says the ABC reporter claims 50% of all pregnancies in the U.S. are, quote, unintended, presumably using contraception. 40% of these result in abortion. 50% of those women will get a second abortion. And overall, the majority of these women are over 30 and using contraception at the time of conception. So how I read this, by the story's own account, abortion involves at least two related phenomena. First, an attack on motherhood. The given example, making women feel guilty, quote, for just wanting to be mothers. And closely related to that is contraception. And this obviously is not the conclusion intentionally being made by either VLR or the ABC reporter. However, it is what they're actually saying in the story, only without the understanding that they're saying it. So one more quote that I found very, very compelling, and I'll end with this longer quote taken from a woman named Mary, who's a Florida college student who had her first abortion at age 21. This is Mary's quote. It didn't seem like the right choice to have the baby then, she told ABCnews.com, but she got pregnant again with the same boyfriend a month later without telling him and aborted again. It felt like it wasn't something I wanted to go through again, that I wanted to be more careful, said Mary. It's a physically painful thing to do, not something I'd ever want to use as a form of birth control. Who wants to go through that pain to end the lives of potential children? But at 24, with a new boyfriend, she got pregnant again, fantasizing about motherhood, but he didn't want the baby. So this is Mary following up. I felt like we were committing murder, that I was about to that I was killing something I wanted, said Mary. I felt like I should feel the pain. I wanted to physically suffer. After three abortions, she was left with lingering health problems, and her doctor suggested she might not have children again. Last quote of Mary, when I was 21, it seemed easier, she said. Now it feels like there is no healing from this. So what a powerful thing to have in print here from the opposite side of the fence. Wow. This is not a pro-life story. This is a pro-abortion story. So,
you know, and I was really shocked when I saw in Plan. I had braced myself, having been in the pro-life movement for 20 years, to see, you know, the evil of killing babies. But one of the few scenes that shocked me in the movie Unplanned was when she was on the ground with a first trimester abortion. I'm not describing this well. When Abby Johnson had, it was either her first or second abortion, she just took the RU46 pill or one of the, you know, post-conception pills to kill the baby in the first trimester. And they really drug that scene out where there was blood all over the bathtub and the bathroom, and you know, that really showed her in excruciating pain for like 24 hours. So the fact that ABC is reporting Mary saying this is physically painful, you're right. That's one significant change that the left has had to their language on this. Another thing that struck me as you were reading was that Mary insists it's a potential child, but then can't help but use the word murder in like the very next sentence.
That's right.
And so it's like, well, which one? You called it a potential child, but then you couldn't help but feel it was murder. And
that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, just in the fact you wanted it to hurt was almost like this indication. It shows that we humans are wired.
Repentant.
Yeah. And we want reparation on top of it. That's
right.
You know, but it says in the Psalms, no man can pay a ransom for his own life.
Mm-hmm.
That no amount of pain can actually make reparation for abortion. And this is where only the blood of Jesus can forgive you. And any listeners out there who've had abortions, you truly can be forgiven if you haven't been baptized, then through baptism. And if you've been baptized and had abortions, then confession. So you can truly be forgiven. But this shows this desire gone awry that she has, the fact that she wants to suffer pain in reparation for murder shows that there's a guilt she can't get rid of there.
That's right. Because we know what's going on as women, we know. And, you know, Villar, the memoir writer in this story, repeats suicide attempts over and over again. And these things are just not talked about. You know, the psychological effect on women, this does not sound like something that is pro-woman or pro-health. You know, this is not healthcare that's being administered. It's harming women.
Yeah.
It's very clear from this story. None of these women sound like they're doing well from this.
Yeah, I want to push a book. It's called Forbidden Grief, the Unspained... sorry, let me try that again. It's called Forbidden Grief, the Unspoken Pain of Abortion. And it's just stat after stat after stat of how many women try to commit suicide and things after their abortion. And again, any listeners out there who've had abortions, please do not commit suicide. Jesus died so you wouldn't have to for that. But it did include, I think, the Ohio suicide line, they cover a lot of statistics. And it was something like 50% of the females who called the Ohio suicide line in some year or sometime in the 1990s, 50% of the females who called were post-abortive. So there's a lot of correlation, even if someone would say, well, that's not causality. Okay, but there's a lot of correlation between suicide and post-abortive women. And that's and the funny thing, not funny, the interesting thing is the left is having a harder time denying this at this point.
Yes. I'd also like to make a recommendation really quick for anybody who's a listener out there, know somebody who might be considering abortion. I would direct them to a very short film that's on YouTube called Eclipse of Reason. Mm-hmm. I just watched this. It is made in the 80s by the founder of NARAL, which is notorious now for being pro-abortion. This doctor, I think, performed 80,000 abortions and then realized what he was doing when ultrasounds really became came into the scene.
You're talking about Bernard Nathanson?
What's that?
Bernard Nathanson? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and this film is produced by him, and you know Charlton Heston narrates the opening. But it's a brutal film. It's definitely not for children. So you don't, you know, show this to a 13-year-old who's pregnant.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something for people to look at because it's such an honest look at abortion.
Great. I'll link that on the blog here. You know, Andromeda, I remember talking to people before Unplanned came out, maybe more like 5 years ago. And it's amazing that I remember even talking to someone who's pro-life who said, well, I don't agree with Planned Parenthood's abortions, but they do other good things, pap smears and mammograms and stuff. And it's been proven that they don't do mammograms, proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. But even the people who believe in contraception, and you and I mean, everyone says, well, you guys are Catholics, you don't. It's like, no, the pill causes abortions. That's the first reason I'm against it. They actually estimate the pill causes 500 million abortions worldwide every year. We'll have a whole separate podcast for that. But besides the fact contraception causes abortion itself, not the barrier method, but anything that ends in any shot or stick or pill. Besides the fact it causes abortion, Planned Parenthood admitted a few years ago 50% of their abortions come from failed contraception. And again, that's right. What, you know, that's, and it, I think
that was quoted here, in this article.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just incredible that like they built up this whole thing of like, we want to hand out contraception so they don't come here for abortions. And then on the other side of the coin, they have to admit that these are two peas in one pod. This is, it's almost as if they're admitting we're handing out contraception because we know it's going to lead to abortion. We know we're going to get the big money for abortion precisely because we know this contraception is going to fail.
Yeah, it'd be like AA handing out shots, you know, at the mall.
Yeah, that's right. Because we really want you to join AA. The difference is joining AA is free, and Planned Parenthood gets hundreds of dollars for every abortion. So no wonder they want contraception. But again, this really proves what the Catholic Church has always said. Besides the fact it's a mortal sin, besides the fact it causes abortions in and of itself, but it's not even going to work at the secular level. I mean, Janet Smith said it best. It's a little bit crude, but Janet Smith goes, 15-year-olds can't remember how to make their bed. How are they going to remember to take a pill every day? You know, and so it's going to lead to abortion. One more thing that just struck me on the language there. I was looking at this article you sent, and this is a quote, "But at 24 with a new boyfriend, she got pregnant again and fantasized about motherhood, but he didn't want the baby," close quote. And, you know, it just struck me reading this article how many times they use the word baby. I mean, it's almost like they just let their guard down to not use the word fetus over and over and over, or embryo over and over and over. I mean, they use potential child once, but I mean, I didn't do a word search. But
this is really why I liked this article. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of pro-life people looked at this at first glance and just saw the horror of, you know, multiple abortions. But if they read it, they would have seen something more like what we're talking about now, which is this raw, you know, truthy language that is not being typically used by the pro-abortion movement. In fact, they really go out of their way to not use this language.
Yeah. And I was talking on, I'm going to be on a podcast with Taylor Marshall and Tim Gordon and Abby Johnson sometime this next week. And we did an abortion one. And Abby and I were actually talking about this Variety article that was written by Owen Gleiberman. He writes for the Chicago Tribune. And this Variety article was about Unplanned. It was basically a movie review. And the subtitle is "Movie Review is Bad Drama but Good Propaganda." And so Gleiberman's whole take is like, well, the movie Unplanned is really just this pro-life, mindless propaganda. And there was 656 comments on the Variety website. And the shocking thing to me, I mean, there was obviously a bunch of pro-life things that said this guy's bogus. But the really surprising thing was that the middle-of-the-road people who aren't exactly pro-life really railed Gleiberman for his article. I'm going to read you on this. Mm-hmm. You can probably hear the vocabulary from this. This is from also someone named Mary, or at least her like online name is Mary. And I think you'll catch in her vocabulary here, she's not like 100% pro-life. But what I found is a lot of pro-abortion people, they might label themselves pro-choice, and I never use that term, but people who label themselves as pro-choice really wanted people to see Unplanned because they're like, well, women have a right to see actually what's going on. And that's really why he got railed. So this is what Mary said as one of the Variety comments, quote, "As a midwife, I have patients that are now pregnant who have previously aborted a pregnancy." You can just tell right there a pregnancy that she's not like life. But listen to this. She continues, "Many of them have lifelong regret, and the previous abortion with its feelings of guilt and regret will often impact the woman's psyche with the entire pregnancy and labor of the current pregnancy. I have had women openly weep in my office with regret. If abortion is to remain legal, it is only fair that we require truthful explanations of what an abortion is. Don't tell women it's just a piece of tissue, get on with your life. Tell them the truth so that they can really make a fully informed decision on what they choose to do." Again, this is not from a pro-life person, right?
Yeah.
"Some women will move forward with an abortion even when they... Some women will move forward with an abortion even when fully informed. Others may not. But if we are calling abortion health care, then let's give women what they truly deserve, complete informed consent, no different than any other procedure." Here's the kicker, this last three sentences. "The movie Unplanned may not have been pleasant, but it fosters conversations on this topic. I would almost consider it to be in the category of a documentary. one which is worth seeing from both camps, close quote. So there's a pro-choice woman saying people need to see this movie, not for the sake of the babies that are killed, but for the sake of women who are going to have to face the horrors of this afterwards.
That's right. Right.
So the language is really changing out there on the left. I mean, I doubt there's many listeners on this podcast who are pro-abortion. But what I want the pro-lifers to hear in all of this is there's kind of an admission at this point that abortion's bad. Now, whether the left takes that as a necessary evil, and that's kind of where Naomi Wolf went about 20 years ago. She was the guy who wrote, she was like some secretary or writer for Al Gore, and she wrote an article 20 years ago basically saying, with the advances in neonatology, we can't really get away with calling this, you know, pieces of conception, products of conception. We just have to admit it's murder. And like Japan actually have these like statues up to the babies that we kill and just kind of honor them and just consider abortion to be murder, but it's a necessary evil. Well, when that came out 20 years ago, Planned Parenthood was infuriated, as you can imagine, at her, because she basically said, you guys are doing the necessary murders of society. And we didn't hear a lot more on that topic from Naomi Wolf, but it's slowly coming back on the left. So I just encourage people to kind of keep an eye out for that at this point.
Yeah, it's hard to say what is going on in the background, what's allowing for this language to slip through. It's probably movies like Unplanned coming out, and they know they need to shift their speech to match up to some more truthy, you know, looks at abortion while still trying to defend it.
Or it could be race kicking in as far as like what we saw well, you and I weren't alive for the civil rights movement, or obviously for slavery changing, but like consciences awake slowly in this country. And when those happen, people have a hard time squashing their consciences. I mean, it's taken much longer than it should have, but it also, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It could be just a strategy of the devil to just, you know, compensate a little bit or capitulate a little bit to keep abortion going, or, this could be the beginning of the end of Roe versus Wade and abortion in this country, as people really say, we just have to admit this is murder and it's also harming women.
I got chills when you said that. I would love that.
Yeah, I'm not, I mean, my listeners know I'm not much of an optimist, so that's feels good and strange coming out of my mouth, but I mean it. And you know, and I was reading some of the people on the left, some of these pro-choice groups, They admitted that they really didn't see it coming down the pike that places like Alabama and Georgia were going to have such heavy laws against abortion. I mean, you have the fetal heartbeat laws up to 6 weeks in Georgia and several other states. But then the fact that Alabama did a full ban on abortion, the left admitted they were surprised. And even the right was surprised at this. Okay, so I'm just going to read, since we've gone a little bit over here, just this is just section 22. Of the life of the Virgin, that is the life of the Virgin Mary, by St. Maximus the Confessor, 7th century doctor of the Church, translated by Shoemaker. Now then, let us consider and examine the glory of the unwedded bride and the dowry of her virginity. Let us ponder what the archangel revealed briefly and clearly. Behold, you will conceive and bear a son, and you will call his name Jesus. Behold, you will conceive, so that in that moment, with that word, he informed her about the wondrous conception. And you will bear a son and call his name Jesus, because his father is not on the earth. In his human birth, he is without a father, as he is without a mother in his eternal birth. And that is why you will give birth without a father and call his name Jesus, which means Savior, because you will experience nothing of the maternal conditions and pains, but his conception was given to you without seed, so also his birth will be without corruption, without pain, and it will be for the salvation of the whole world. This act will be made known by the name. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High with respect to his human nature. He said this because in his divinity he is exalted beyond every glory. But concerning his human nature, he said, he will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, not only because of the hypostatic union, but also because of the call from on high and because of the confirmation by wondrous deeds. For you will call him Jesus. Nevertheless, later on, the Father will call him from heaven, beloved Son, and when he begins to accomplish innumerable miracles, it will be known by all the wise that he is the Son of the Most High. and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. And he spoke this also concerning his humanity, because with that he began preaching the gospel and receiving those who believe in his name, who call him the throne of David and the house of Jacob. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. He speaks of the unending reign not only on account of his divinity, but also on account of his humanity, because with respect to both natures, there is no end to his reign. And he will reign over those who received his reign with faith. Now he will reign over those who believe in his word. But at the end of all things, when all things will be subjected to him, as the holy apostle says, he must reign until his enemies have been placed under his feet. Because he has put all things in subjection under his feet, when all things are subjected to him, then he will himself be subjected to the one who put all things in subjection to him. 1 Corinthians 15:27-28. God the Father, that is, because he called him to submit to the deliberate subjection of our nature, for he assumes the labors of our victory. Thanks for joining us on Romecast number 7. God bless you.